This is KERA News. I'm Lauren Silverman. A bullet train could someday take passengers from Dallas to Houston in just 90 minutes. But the plan faces opposition, including legal battles and legislation aimed at the project. Brandon Formby is a reporter with the Texas Tribune who's been following the bullet train developments. He talked with KERA's Eric Austin.
Let's go through the players involved in this bullet train saga. You have a company called Texas Central Partners, and you have Central Japan Railway.
Texas Central Partners is the parent company that has a few different subsidiaries that not only want to build and operate a high-speed train from Dallas to Houston, but also want to develop the stations, three different stations that'll be on the route, one in Dallas, one in Houston, and one in Grimes County. The Japanese company already operates a high-speed train in Japan. It would be their technology and their train cars that would be used in Texas.
Why Texas?
The big reasons they point to are the size of the North Texas population and economy, the size of the Houston area population and economy, and the fact that between those two areas, you have relatively flat terrain, which makes it a lot easier to build a line through.
So how are they going to fund this train?
The company says that because there is so much interest globally in getting high-speed trains up and running in America, in North America, that there are plenty of investors, plenty of investment groups that would like to get in on the ground floor with this and contribute funding. They also point to President Trump's wishes to use private financing to spur over $1 trillion worth of investment in new American infrastructure.
There's lots of excitement about this train, but there are also many opponents. And there's a group called Texans Against High-Speed Rail. Tell me about their perspective.
They are strongly opposed to the project. They have a lot of issues with it. One of the biggest ones is the company's claim that it can use eminent domain to force people to sell their property to the company if it needs it for the line. They don't like a private company having that power. And they also argue that the way they read the state law, that the company doesn't have that power. They fear that the train will disrupt a lot of rural Texans' way of life.
There's this collision, it seems like, between urban Texas and rural Texas. Why is that?
The thing that's driving the project is connecting two of the biggest economic regions in America. That's North Texas and the Houston area. But to do that, to connect people who live and work in those two areas, you have to run hundreds of miles through rural land that a lot of farms, a lot of ranches, a lot of homesteads have been on for generations, if not more than 100 years.
Now, lots of bills related to the bullet train have been filed at the Texas Capitol. So what role are lawmakers trying to play in this whole issue?
There were more than 20 bills filed, you know, in February against the project. The project made it out of the 2015 legislative session largely unscathed. And some of the bills filed this session already are similar to ones that didn't get much traction 2 years ago. Some of the bills would explicitly forbid Texas Central from using eminent domain. Other bills seek to make sure that Texas and Texas taxpayers would not be on the hook to bail out the project if for some reason it was not successful. Some seek to protect the property along the route in case the project doesn't work.
Brandon Formby with the Texas Tribune, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
KERA recently launched a new American graduate series. It's called Race, Poverty, and the Changing Face of Schools. KERA's education reporters have spent several months at four high schools. Today, as part of the series, Think partnered with Houston Matters from Houston Public Media for a discussion on race in schools. Chris Boyd talked with H. Richard Milner, director of the Center for Urban Education at the University of Pittsburgh, about how racial backgrounds can affect the quality of education students receive.
What we find is that teachers tend to have good intentions, but teachers are about 80% white, middle-class, female, and the student demography, of course, is increasing with diversity. And so what we find is that the research is clear, is that black and brown students, that is, vis-a-vis black students, Latinx students, are referred to the office for what's known as subjective infractions, and white students are referred to the office for what's known as objective infractions. And so what happens is teachers are not aware of these, what might be characterized as implicit biases. And so they're sending students out in a large number and proportionately lead students to missing great opportunities to learn their curriculum.
Richard Milner is the author of Racing to Class. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can listen to the podcast anytime, think.kera.org. As part of our American Graduate Series, Stella Chavez has been reporting on life at Liberty High School in Frisco. Stella talked with several students about their experiences with race in and out of school. We start today with Rida Iqbal, who wears a hijab and is president of the Muslim Student Association.
I'm Rida Iqbal, and I'm a junior at Liberty High School. I'm in this class called Health Science 2 where we go to nursing homes and stuff. And so there's a lot of people there that ask me why I wear it and what it's called. So, like, I answer the questions and I try to be nice. And sometimes, you know, you do get comments that are rude and you just have to, like, accept their opinions because, you know, everyone's going to have something to say about you. But really not at school because a lot of these people have Muslim friends. So they know about the culture and we also learn about Islam and Christianity and, like, a lot of religions, so...
I'm Christina Lazutkin. I know there's a lot of like openness and tolerance in this community. Like you definitely won't hear anyone who actually wants to be racist. But I do think it's slightly difficult having a discussion without feeling like you're going to offend someone or that you're just going to spout some idea that you don't personally agree with. I feel like there needs to be more experience in this community with reacting with like other backgrounds. Just because people generally stick together and we don't always have that experience that is needed to have that conversation.
My name is Shoaib Faruqi. I am a junior in high school and I am the coordinator for the Muslim Student Association here at Liberty. I could say with absolute affirmation that I've never met anyone who like was discriminatory towards me. Of course there are those outlying events like say I'm walking to the mosque. There's like a bunch of Muslims trying to get in and all of a sudden like a truck comes by, you know, just shouting like some sort of slur. That's gonna happen, honestly. The best you can do about those kinds of situations is just hope for the best for that person and just move on with it. You know, there's no point in trying to retaliate. That's just gonna misrepresent what we are, what we stand for.
Hi, I'm Taha Siddiqui, and I'm a senior. I believe I can make a change in the community by just showing people what Muslims are like. So I try to do that in my class and in my community.
Brooke Colombo, if you talk to someone who's like white, they're going to tell you, oh yeah, like we all interact, yada, yada. But if you talk to someone who's a minority, they're always going to say, yes, I have white friends. I have other friends that like aren't the same race as me. But I tend to like flock to people who are of the same like racial and especially cultural background as me. I think like there's definitely interaction among everyone. Not about race so much as it is like about the way people act and what they can relate to.
Julia Savage. I just moved here to Texas a few months ago. Coming from a school that had 9% minority was definitely different because here at Liberty there's, I think, 54% minority. At first I realized the difference because I was just so used to there only being 9% minority. But after a while, you really start to get involved with other kids and you start to realize it less, I guess. Because the only thing that makes us different is our skin tones and our cultures. But when we come together as a school and as classmates in the same room, we all get along just fine.
Those were students from Liberty High School in Frisco. You can explore the entire American Graduate Series online at kera.org/schools. This is KERA News.